Welcome to DAD, Dads Aren't Deadbeats, a community of care and compassion in observance of the Golden Rule. Come and join us and contribute to riveting conversations about fathers, their children, rights and agency.
It's Monday.
It's National Grandpa Day.
And you are very welcome to this, our very first grown-up podcast of the DAD, aka the Dad Pod.
Nice.
So, Matt, National Grandpa Day.
It certainly is, yes.
So what's your theory behind this today, then?
Well, it's really a day where granddads are celebrated.
And would you class yourself to be a granddad?
No, I class myself as looking like a granddad. But then, in fairness, I started looking like a granddad at 21 when my hair fell out. I always put this down to being married. So married has aged me like milk and my lovely wife like a fine wine.
Wow.
I know, but it's okay. She's sat 3 foot away from us. She doesn't mind.
Okay, so what are we talking about today, my partner in crime?
Well, here we go again, back in the shed. I can't believe it's been a week since the last time we did one of these things. So today, I thought we'd do a bit of a double whammy. Now, last week, we suggested to the lovely listener land that we would be talking about how the organisation got its name before we get cancelled. And then we could do with spending a bit of time perhaps telling the audience about Kafkas. So tell us a bit about how we got this name, Lee.
If I remember correctly, we decided on the business model and then came up with a few names. Can you remember any of them, Matt?
I can, yeah. So there was a few. I think we were toying with the name Clever Underdogs Nothing square brackets but Truth, but the abbreviation of that was somewhat problematic.
That to be fair, that was a good one. We also messed about with the idea of calling it Bright Adults Should Try and Rectify Differences again. Problematic when used as an abbreviation.
Absolutely. So how did we settle on such a potentially contentious name as Dad?
I think the team we're talking about, what we might name the venture, and Auntie said, let's call it Dad. So we retrofitted it in the abbreviation to the word DAD, if I remember correctly.
We did, yeah. So why call it Dads Aren't Deadbeats?
It was a simple decision, really. We were really concerned about the lack of support networks in place for fathers during divorce and separation. So in addition, when you look on social media, there are literally tons of content creators who describe dads as deadbeats. Do you remember the day I showed you the YouTube clip of the content creator doing nothing but shitting on absentee dads?
I do, yeah.
He said dads are deadbeats, and that triggered something in me. I asked a simple but challenging question. What? All of them? And thus, Dad was born. I hate the idea of assuming that all absentee dads are deadbeats. It shuts down the conversation and doesn't allow people to understand that not all absentee dads want to be, and few of them can do anything about it.
Now, it's probably important to stress that we wrestled with the name for a long time and need to make something absolutely clear here. You may hear this repeated all over our platforms, on social media, in the video logs, in the messages we write on the website. So the name DAD, Dads Aren't Deadbeats, isn't saying all dads aren't deadbeats. Let's be grown up about this, though. We can't homogenise all dads, especially absentee dads, into that one group we call deadbeats. Stop and think about it. If we did this for any other group of people, there would be an outcry. For example, we are the first people to say to any man that describes women as gold diggers that they are wrong. That some may be, but we cannot label all women in this way. It's impractical, unethical and immoral to do so. Lee?
Absolutely. So as a platform, DAD is concerned with having civil discourse about the things that matter. Our parental rights, our children, their rights and agency. So if we can be civil enough to say that some dads are deadbeats, perhaps you can meet us in the middle in suggesting that not all dads are deadbeats.
That would probably have been a much more effective name for the organisation anyway. Not all dads are deadbeats would have been a good one, but it does somewhat ruin the symmetry of the abbreviation, and my autistic brain likes symmetry. So something we will repeat constantly is the need to have civil conversations about difficult topics in observance of the Golden Rule. We hope the platform can promote this ethic of reciprocity, which is that kind of making sure we do the same thing for one another, we show that same kindness.
Yeah. This means we will always treat others with kindness they deserve as human beings. As agents of free thought and aspirations, we do this in hope of building a community of compassion, care and love. So come and join the conversation.
So the predominant purpose of our platform is education, and as discussed in our preface recording last week, Lee and I will spend some of our recordings talking about matters relating to marital and relationship breakdowns. These are never easy and often come with turmoil and a barrage of considerations. So we're going to use the platform to educate on matters our audience may be less familiar with, in the hope it alleviates some of the struggles faced post-separation. Now, to be clear, we are just two blokes sat in a shed, drinking tea and chewing the cud. We are not experts in the field yet, but we will do our best to be as informative and accurate as possible.
Yeah. Now we have done the boring, tell everybody about the name and avoid getting cancelled bit, let's get into talking about Kafkas. Please bearing in mind that this is a 30-minute podcast, so what we will do now is a whistle-stop tour of this important aspect of child safeguarding. So, according to the UK government website, the Children and Family Court Advisory and Support Service, so CAFCAS for short, looks after the interests of children involved in family proceedings. It is dependent of the courts and social services, but works under the rules of the family court and legislation to work with children and their families, and then advise the courts on what is considered to be the best interests of the individual child.
Absolutely. I thought you were having a stroke then.
I thought I was as well. Cough it up.
So, yes, the CAFCAS works independent of government, but is sponsored by the Ministry of Justice, which means much of their money comes through government taxations and taxations on the public. So, they're an executive non-departmental public body, and CAFCAS, through their family court advisors, become involved in cases for one of three reasons. Firstly, they can become involved when children are subject to an application for care or supervision proceedings by social services. This falls under the umbrella term of public law. They can become involved in an adoption application, which is once again public law, or when parents who are separating or divorcing can't agree on arrangements for their children, and this is private law. Most of our audience are probably going to be interested in that aspect of CAFCAS's work, the private law element of it.
Yeah, now let's be clear, we're not here to give CAFCAS a hard time. In fact, based on my understanding of them, they appear to be laser focused on the best interests of the child. Why is this, Matt?
Well, arguably it's because of a moral and ethical practice. It's a requirement, but the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of the Child plays a real significant part here also.
The United Nations Conventions on the Rights of the Child is an international treaty signed by most UN member states. It outlines 45 indelible rights which are to be bestowed on the children of those nations that have signed the convention.
For example, Article 3 states that the best interests of the child must be a top priority in all decisions and actions that affect children.
And Article 14 identifies a child's rights to freely express their thoughts and opinions and to access all kinds of information. As long as it is within the law, you can find links to a copy of the UNCRC in our show notes.
That's right. So from this week, we're going to have stuff in our show notes that allows you to go and research these matters further. Okay, CAFCAS have to abide by the relevant legislation that resulted from this convention. In this case, the Children Act 1989. They will particularly seek to act in the best interests of the child whilst allowing them freedom of expression and speech.
Yeah, so in cases relating to child contact disputes, so child arrangement orders being the most common, CAFCAS will usually carry out police and local authority checks on both parents prior to the first court hearing.
Court hearings are usually broken down into several hearings where disputed matters cannot be resolved in the first hearing. Now remember folks, CAFCAS contacting the police and the local authority is about acting in the best interests of your children and is not meant to be a rod to beat you with.
They will usually speak to one or both parents, often by a telephone call, to offer an opportunity to explain any safeguarding concerns or welfare concerns that they have for the children.
And once this is done, CAFCAS prepares a safeguarding report for the court. This is usually issued to the court 3 days before the hearing. The report is known as a Section 7 report, and this sounds horribly formal, but again, it's merely an analysis of any safeguarding or welfare concerns raised by either party in the dispute. We have a template of a CAFCAS report in our show notes to demonstrate this is not a scary process.
When forming judgments, CAFCAS officers for their report, and later judges when sitting in the court, will give consideration to what is known as the welfare checklist. Number one, are the wishes of the child considered?
There is the influence of the UNCRC and the Children Act 1989 again in that particular welfare statement.
Number two, the child's physical, emotional and social needs.
For the judge, this is an important determination. Is one parent only capable of meeting the child's needs or are both?
And number three, the likely effect of any changes in circumstances on the child.
This is particularly relevant if the separation forces the sale of a house or one or the other parent wants to look to move away. This ties in with child development theory about attachment behaviours.
Number four. Now the fourth thing on the checklist is consideration of the child's sex, age, background and any other characteristics deemed important.
The rights of a child, including that which allows them to voice their concerns, is pertinent here. Providing there's no safeguarding risk to a child, the court will take a child of suitable maturation as being competent in voicing their own wishes.
And the sixth point involves considering any harm the child has suffered or is likely to suffer.
If either carer has been violent or has demonstrated a history of violence, they are unlikely to be given unsupervised visits with their children.
And number seven, finally on the checklist, they consider how capable each of his parents and any other person in relation to whom the court considers the question to be relevant is of meeting his needs.
In child arrangement hearings, a judge, or usually a panel of judges, have to make a determination about parental competency. This may be extended beyond the immediate parents or caregivers to other carers in both parents' families.
Now, parents can argue against CAFCAS report recommendations and highlight any factual inaccuracies. The CAFCAS officer who conducted the report can be called to the court and cross-examined.
Contesting a CAFCAS report can be tricky and it requires a clear, concise argument with evidence that supports the complaint and the complainant, so that's the person arguing against the report. This isn't a particularly scary process, but having done some research on this now so you don't have to, I think we're both in agreement that if you ever wanted to contest a CAFCAS report, you're probably better off doing that with a solicitor than on your own.
Yeah, 100%, Matt. I mean, you do everything legally, right? And you do require legal representation to obviously go down that route if you wish to do so.
Definitely. Definitely. So as we said a moment ago, we're not trying to, for a second, give CAFCAS a hard time. We're absolutely certain that, for the most part, everybody that works within that service are acting in the best interests of children. They're very interested in safeguarding the welfare of children, and that isn't always exercised as clearly and clinically as it might be, probably because of the circumstances they find themselves in. In its most recent Ofsted report, Ofsted reported that despite the significant impact of the high demand, CAFCAS has sustained and improved the focus on children's safety and welfare. They reported that senior leaders have led and developed creative and highly effective strategies in collaboration with key national and regional partners to continue to deliver high quality services to children, families and the family court. Lee, anything from you on CAFCAS?
Well, the research I've done, Matt, obviously I want to go back further. So earlier reports going back to 2016. I suppose you obviously know about this report in 2016. So the CAFCAS board announced a study in June 2016 relating to unfounded allegations against fathers in the context of the family disputes. So the research I've also found is 2/3 of 216 cases of allegations of domestic violence result in the loss of what I like to call dad time, creating a belief that fathers can't be trusted. So CAFCAS are essentially fueling a gender-based decision or preference, as you would like to say, and having their time wasted.
And that's really disturbing if we're talking about 2/3 of those cases resulting in one parent missing out, or more to the point, let's contextualise it properly. If 2/3 of those cases result in children missing out on one parent, that is a worry.
That is a big worry. Yeah. In my eyes, personally, children deserve both parents. You know, as long as both parents are or can be civil with each other, the children deserve to obviously have, in my opinion, two happy, healthy parents.
Yeah, don't disagree.
Two homes to go to, mm-hmm. and work together you know, to bring up the children. I mean, what's your thoughts on this, Matt?
Yeah, so I think we have to kind of be sensitive to the individual circumstances. And having just said at the start of this, we don't want to homogenise deadbeat dads. We shouldn't want to homogenise other groups too. So we can't say it's the case for all parents. I think that certainly there are some circumstances where children are better off living with one or the other parent. So I've worked in education for several years, and often we'd see families where you might have domestic abuse in the household, and then, you know, at significant risk of domestic abuse, and this will probably come up in later podcasts, where it was evident the children being kept away from the abusive parent was in that moment in their best interest. I think the problem for me comes when we think about the percentages, the numbers, for example, of non-molestation orders that are taken. We're doing some research the other day on this, and somewhere between 20 and 40% of those are thought to be spurious.
I think it was 44% we came to the...
Yeah, so it's 44%, yeah. The most recent research suggests. So that's 44% of orders about some form of domestic violence are lies at best and misinformed at absolute best. But yeah, that's problematic, because that then is a clear deprivation of rights for children.
And then obviously with domestic violence, CAFCAS are involved. So how do you determine... I mean, 44%, Matt, that is significant.
It's a large number, and that is a worry, absolutely.
Which is, you know, it's close to half. So half of these allegations, shall we say, whether they're true or not true, CAFCAS will obviously look thoroughly through every single account.
Yeah, and I think that part of the reason we have these high numbers of contentious orders is that we have a legal system that has let down women, a legal system that has let down men, and a legal system that continues to let down children. Now, we won't say too much more about that just now, because we've got future episodes coming up on that very thing.
Yeah. I would like to talk about, obviously, women who have gone through domestic abuse. Now, there is something called Women's Aid, where people can go to, especially, obviously it's for women, but women can go to for support, and guidance, really, to be honest with you. Now, CAFCAS have worked with Women's Aid after the release of their 19th child homicide report and recommendations for the family justice system. So we've got Women's Aid working very closely with CAFCAS to obviously try and get this resolved quickly, Matt, in each and every account that's given.
Well, I think essentially the reason they're working together is for the same reason lots of agencies that have contact with children are encouraged to work together. We know in the education sector and the health sectors particularly, and social work, we know that where you have multi-agency approaches to children's welfare, the results long-term are much better. And we absolutely do need to look with shock on the fact that children are dying at the hands of domestically abusive parents. So them working together, no bad thing. My concern generally tends to come when things like reports are rushed, or when systems can be manipulated. And again, we'll speak on that further in later episodes.
Yeah. Also, I'd like to obviously talk about, obviously, now the female parties, they have Women's Aid. Where do the men turn to, Matt?
Yeah, so there's very little in the way of similar support networks for men. That there are a few, and again, we'll link those in the show notes for this episode. But they're not nearly as prolific. But part of the reason for that, Lee, might be that we have a situation where women are much more likely to be the victim, survivor of abuse than men are. So that might be part of the reason for that. There's the other notion that women, as a general rule of thumb, here we go, we're generalising and marginalising again. Yeah. Women generally are more emotionally intelligent and comfortable with talking about their stuff, with what's going on at any given point in time. Men aren't great at that, and that probably is because of the way we're raised, so it's the social context in which we're raised. But it also almost certainly has something to do with the fact that we haven't normalised that process.
Yeah.
And I think...
Yeah, I think men are designed, or the men think that they've just got to get on with it, be strong, and just do what's best for the family. But in reality, men do struggle with this. And I think getting a bigger reach out there for somewhere for obviously males to go to for support during times like this, especially when it comes to their children. Mm. I think it's a definite must have.
Well, I agree, and I think that's part of the reason we're doing the whole dad thing, is so that there is somewhere that we can provide support. And again, folks, to be absolutely clear, not that we should need to beat this drum, hopefully you've all seen that our website is live now and we beat the drum several times in several different places on that. If you are a deadbeat dad, this is not the platform for you. We're reaching out to those fathers who are trying to be the best versions of themselves and can't be because of the socially constructed nature of masculinity. So we're here for you and we want you to reach out and feel part of this community.
Yeah, I'd also like to talk about, there's something called the DAP course, which supports partners and ex-partners at the risk from a domestic abuse. So DAP, the abbreviation for DAP is Domestic Abuse Perpetrator Program. Now, this is for people who have gone through domestic abuse and who have basically admitted that they are domestic abusers, Matt. So in my opinion, this is a brilliant thing to do, obviously, for parents to come together, work together for the children. Now, this course would be court ordered, and it does come from CAFCAS directly as well. But this court is only this obviously DAP course is only for people who obviously admit that they are domestic abusers. Which, if people are ready to admit that, brilliant. But then, how do you determine when people don't?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like a bit of a strange system in that you would have to implicate yourself in a crime to be eligible for a DAP course, which is fine. If you're a domestically abusive person, I think we're both on the same page with this, you should be not sent to Shawshank's prison, but buried underneath it. But if you're not, and you're, for example, one of those non-molestation that fit into the 40% category.
Yeah.
If you're one of those people, then it's a real shame that you'd have to admit domestic assault to be eligible for this course when you needn't have done anything wrong in the first place. So there's a couple of other things with the DAP, and that's that in recent Freedom of Information Act requests, CAFCAS does not have data on the success rate of the DAP, and it does not have data or statistics on the issue of how many times it has been proven that CAFCAS officers placed a child at risk with their report that they shared to the court. So, yeah, two worrying pieces of information there.
And you would think there would be statistics by now, wouldn't you?
You certainly would, particularly if it's an organisation that's funded through taxpayer money, because they're sponsored by the Ministry of Justice, so you'd have thought that that would be the case. It's something that we don't do quite as well as America.
Yeah.
America are very open with the any public spending that occurs.
I've got a question for you, Matt, and it might throw you off. But just thinking about this now, obviously the DAP. So how, in your opinion, does the DAP course? Obviously, now we have something. There's something called mediation that both parties can go through. But in my knowledge, correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but you can't go to mediation with domestic abuse signposted, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that the issue is that if you've been accused even of domestic violence, it doesn't have to have been proven at this point, but mediation is taken off the table. Now, in terms of safeguarding children, that's absolutely the right thing to do. If a person is accused of being domestically violent, you do not want them in a situation or environment where that could be mediated, and the person could end up back in the household posing a threat to children. However, in the cases where this 40% of non-molestation orders, for example, that are falsely made, it's a real shame that chance of mediating a marital breakdown is taken away from 50% of the people involved in the process. So yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, I think CAFCAS, they're just not resourced enough, Matt, to obviously inquire further into these matters. And I think decisions are rushed and facts need to be obviously introduced.
Yeah, I'm pleased you mentioned that, actually, because we're going to be interviewing somebody for our podcast in a week's time, a female who has gone through the court system and had quite a torrid time of it with CAFCAS, and she's looking forward to sharing that story with you lovely dad listeners out there.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to that as an interview, Matt.
Excellent stuff.
So 2020, I'd like to talk about, Matt. The Ministry of Justice review found problems related to, obviously, the domestic abuse. Now, why is this, obviously, years later, that the Ministry of Justice are now getting involved with these allegations or true facts of domestic abusers?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think that's one that would almost certainly require further research on our part. It definitely isn't unusual for the Ministry of Justice to jump in and kind of intervene in these things, particularly when they're essentially the organisation that are sponsoring CAFCAS. But that's something perhaps we can come back to in a later episode.
Yeah, well, the Ofsted inspection of CAFCAS, now they do actually recognise the pattern of domestic abuse towards women, which the inspection did not identify. Also, it didn't obviously identify when alienating children from one parent to the other.
Yeah, so the whole thing with parental alienation is a really fascinating one. And it's a contested point of view. So in much academic psychology, there does seem to be some contention on whether or not parental alienation is even a thing, or whether it was a kind of catch-all statement that was introduced by or as a result of some embittered partners who didn't have access to their children. Now, once again, parental alienation as a topic is something we'll come back to at a later date, and we'll offer you lots of research findings around that topic too.
Yeah, I'd look forward to obviously having a discussion about that matter, along with many other things as well, which we've got topicked up and ready to go. So I think we'll leave it at that for now, Matt.
All right then. So just before we do anything else, though, and whilst we're still on the topic of CAFCAS, I don't want anyone jumping into the comments section with statistics from Trustpilot or anything like that. We know CAFCAS have some of the worst ratings on Trustpilot that there can be. But think about this for a moment for us, please. Two parties who were once happy go to war in court. There can only be one winner. And who do you assume writes the reviews? Now, I don't like using the terms winners and losers when we're talking about things like the welfare of children particularly, but let's just run with those as terms colloquially because they're easy for us to handle. So the losing party in court is much more likely to write a negative review of CAFCAS, and invariably the winning party, I'm doing inverted commas here, Lee, I know people can't see them,
so I can see
that, is less likely to. So the person who comes away with decisions that they feel have gone in their favour are much less likely to write positive reviews. Okay, folks, well, anyway, let's head back over to Lee for his thought for this fine January day.
So my thought for the day today is, Matt, is that truth does not care what you believe. Truth is what you know.
And on that theme, we will be discussing the issue of truth in our next podcast together. Okay, that's going to be a deep dive into philosophy, but I promise we'll make it as fun as we can. Now, we're still toying with the format for this thing, but we'll almost certainly have a thought for the day from Lee in each podcast and a ridiculously bad dad joke from me. So here we go. A child asked his father, "Dad, do politicians ever tell the truth?" And the father answered, "Only when they call each other liars, son." Which is a good one, though.
It is, Matt, it is. Well, thank you, everybody, for letting us ramble on for the last 30 minutes. We hope you enjoyed this little podcast. Starting next week, we will end our episode and everything else we do in the media with a rallying cry to all those fathers who are trying to be the best versions of themselves. We call this the Dad Creed. In those moments when you feel downcast, when the hope is sucked from your lungs and your gaze is cast to the floor in despair, raise your head up high, and with the thought of the most precious thing in your life, your children, held firmly in your heart, say the DAD Creed with me. I believe in nothing more than the love I have for you. Not hell nor high water, not rain nor shine, not hate nor despair. Or those who would keep us apart with no true cause to do so will change this love. A father's love is like no other, imparted on his soul from the moment he first saw the apple of his eye. The rights of fathers and those of their children are not a privilege, they are a right. A right we will exercise with compassion, care, love, and observance of the golden rule. Raise your hands confidently, caringly, and with hope. Be counted, because not all dads are deadbeats.
And so, if you're interested in having riveting conversations about fathers, their children, rights and agency, look out for DAD on the interwebs and social media. We look forward to seeing you and welcoming you to our conversations.